Hey everyone, welcome to Locked On Lakers for Wednesday. Brian Kamenetsky, Andy Kamenetsky. The Lakers get a dominant performance from Anthony Davis in game one, and they take it from the Warriors 117 to 112. Huge one for the Lakers. We'll break down next.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Thanks to everybody for making Locked On Lakers first listen of every day, Monday through Friday. No matter how or where you get your podcasts, it's always going to be free. It's never going to be behind a paywall. And Locked On Lakers on YouTube is where you can go hang out with nearly 16,000 people who are all going to be really excited with the results of game one. The Lakers win 117 to 112 in San Francisco over the Warriors. They're up 1-0 in this best of seven. Do want to let everybody know that today's episode is brought to you by eBay Motors. Andy, a championship team is about each player being a perfect fit. We saw a lot of that on Tuesday. Same with your vehicle. So for parts that fit, head to eBay Motors and look for the green check. Stay in the game with eBay Guaranteed Fit. ebaymotors.com. Let's ride. eBay Guaranteed Fit only available to U.S. customers. Eligible items only and exclusions apply. No exclusions applied, Andy, in game one on Tuesday for the Lakers. I mean, I got very few notes. Like, they came out on Tuesday in a game where they had a little bit of an advantage because of the rest. I haven't played since Friday in game six, or game six closing out. Memphis had a little bit of an advantage even on the road, and they played really well. I have very few complaints.
Yeah, they did the things that you expect them to do in terms of playing fantastic defense, whether you're talking about point of attack with particularly Dennis Schroeder and Jared Vanderbilt, the work that they did keeping Steph Curry from getting comfortable in this game. 27 points, but 10 of 24 from the field. He never found any real consistent groove. Then you talk about LeBron, despite having a pretty shaky offensive game, and can we please put a moratorium on final possessions for the Lakers, running down the clock late in the fourth and LeBron just dribbling things out to put up a stagnant three? Like, please,
okay, for I mean, the that, love. That was definitely something to come.
For the love of good. All that is holy, whatever, you know, being that you believe in, please. Or if nothing else, if this is what we're going to do, can we at least have D'Angelo Russell or Austin Reeves dribble it out? Because they're better shooters. Like, on a night where LeBron was 1 of 8 from behind the arc, not only did Golden State know this was coming, but I'm pretty sure they were comfortable with it.
Yeah, if you missed it, LeBron, the Lakers had a chance to ice the game with, they were up by 3 at the time, and LeBron, about 35 seconds left, LeBron dribbles the clock out and takes a 3-pointer, which he missed. Gave the Warriors a chance to tie. Locked On Warriors, I'm sure, is spending at least 17 of their allotted 30 minutes yelling at Jordan Poole for the 3-pointer he took. But to be clear, though,
the reason what got me to LeBron is, despite some of the offensive shakiness, I thought defensively he was really locked in. He had 3 blocks. And then Anthony Davis,
let's start there. Oh, because, yeah, you know, like I said, I mean, like, if the worst thing you can find, you know, there are very few things, you know, we can nitpick at the LeBron shot, you know, the offensive glass, you know, the Warriors were very active there, as we expected they would be. And there are little things that you can find, but it's, you know, they're on the road against the Golden State Warriors. They have many titles. the Golden State gets a vote here, but man, Anthony Davis, we talked about it. Like, the Lakers need him to be the best player on their team and ideally the best player on the floor. And when you put both sides of the ball into the equation, I don't think there's even any remote question that Anthony Davis, the best player on that floor on Tuesday, dominant performance on both sides.
Yeah, if you have a suggestion for best player on the floor tonight that was not Anthony Davis, seriously get the F out of here because you're an idiot. Like, right. You either weren't watching the game or you're trying way too hard to be the smartest person in the room.
I go back to the perfect Logan Roy quote. I love you, but you're not serious. You are not serious people.
He had 30 points, 23 rebounds, 4 blocks in this game, like countless shots altered and bothered, intimidated. He joins now this list of Lakers who've had a 30-20 game in the playoffs. Elgin Baylor, Wilt Chamberlain, Kareem, Shaq. That's a pretty damn good list. Like, that is a nice...
Can we just call time out for a second and make a note that the Lakers have 5 guys? 5! Yeah. With 30 and 20 games in the playoffs?
Reason
that's crazy.
They have a lot of banners, Brian.
I'm just saying, but like when moments like this or those little like statistics, somebody throws out one of these little statistical quirks or, you know, this moment in history kind of things, and you're just like, God damn, this team has won a lot and had basically every good player the NBA has ever seen.
Yeah, and AD played the entire second half of this game. There was actually a point late in the game because the Warriors, you know, they made many pushes throughout this game. There was a lot of back and forth. There was a really, really fun game to watch, genuinely exciting.
Yeah,
genuinely
we'll talk
intense.
About that in a minute. Yeah, it lived up to all the hype.
But there was a point late in the game where the Warriors were starting to make a push where I wondered if, while I totally understand why Darvin wanted to play AD the entire second half, I don't think it was a dumb move, bad move, or whatever. I was starting to wonder if it might have been a mistake only because it looked like the team as a whole, their energy was starting to flag a little bit, and AD had been such like a force in that energy.
Lakers were up by 14, I believe it was, in the lead, and Golden State came back, tie it.
Right.
Went nuclear there for about a minute and a half. Lakers couldn't score.
And I was wondering if maybe even if the move was justified, it backfired. But in the end, the Lakers won. And this is the type of game that I don't want to say you should come to expect from Anthony Davis, just in the sense that, again, we laid out that company. It doesn't happen often. But this is why. You know, D'Angelo Russell, after the game, said something I thought was interesting when he was praising AD. He talked about how AD takes a lot of hate from the media over the course of the season. And he's like, you know, he's dominated the playoffs. He just said, if he can play, he'll dominate the game. If he can't play, he can't play. And on one hand, I totally understand where D'Lo is coming from. On another hand, he summarized exactly what can frustrate Laker fans, not even just because nobody ever thinks AD's dogging it. Nobody ever thinks that he doesn't care about being great. But there can sometimes be the inexplicable moments where it feels like he just isn't as aggressive as he needs to be.
Yeah, because I was about to say, I don't think D'Lo kind of boiled down, he can play or he's not going to play. But I don't think it's just that, the hating media, I mean, I doubt D'Angelo was listening to our show from Minnesota for most of the year, but I guess you never know. But yeah, when we talked about AD, it wasn't just, you know, availability. It was the impact. It was the fact that you could have him go through games, even games where the statistical output was good, and still feel like he wasn't the dominant force that he could be. And it's because he's shown you the top end that it could be so frustrating. But the stretch since, you know, coming back from really the injury, certainly threw it into the playoffs, and it's been pretty special.
The top end, it's not just that the top end is great for Anthony Davis, it's that the top end is so uniquely great. Like it makes you, it feels like you're watching like a fictional player play basketball, because like some of the stuff he's doing feels invented for like a book about basketball or a movie about basketball, where the guys, you know, like he got the equivalent of like the spider bite in Spider-Man, and all of a sudden becomes this like amazing player doing things that seem otherwise humanly impossible.
Yeah, just because, like, it's how many guys can legitimately control a game on both ends? You know, and just it's a very small list. There are dominant, you know, John Morant, saw him in the last round, can have games where he goes off for 45, you know, goes off for 50, 36, 38, whatever. I mean, puts up huge numbers. There are a lot of guys around the league that can put up huge offensive numbers. But there's something to be said for an AD, you know, obviously, you know, he got 30 on Tuesday in game one. That's a lot. But, you know, what he's shown in game six is that he can be almost equally as dominant with 17 points or 18 or whatever he had in that game. It's so hard to, like, defense is so hard to quantify in the NBA, and it's so hard to, like, pick which guy really is the best. But, like, when you watch Anthony Davis, it's a perfect melding of statistical data and the eye test, which just says this guy is wrecking everything the other team is trying to do offensively.
You know what it's like, and I don't remember which Supreme Court justice this was, but the one who said when it comes to, like, defining what pornography is, you know what it is when you see it. Anthony Davis makes you understand what defense is when defense is often this thing that isn't quantifiable. You know what I mean? Like, he makes you actually, he's defensive porn is what he is.
Justice Anthony Potter Davis. Stewart.
Okay, Potter Stewart. Okay. And AD makes you understand defense porn, which is a very specific tab for porn.
There's a lid for every yeah,
no judgment. No judgment.
That you do you and be free out there. And God bless. But whether AD, you know, you mentioned D'Lo, and I really do want to spend a minute or two just talking about how effing fun this game was. And, like, please give me more of this for the rest of the series, however long it lasts. Plenty more to come. We'll get to it next.
Locked On Lakers is brought to you by BetterHelp, and it's easy to get caught up in what everyone else needs from you and to never take a moment to think about yourself, like balancing being there for your significant other, for your children, for your extended family, your job, just the day-to-day, you lose track of being there for yourself. And when you spend all that time giving, it's great, but it can leave you feeling stretched thin, burnt out, and life doesn't come, unfortunately, with a user manual. So when it's not working, it's easy to feel stuck. And navigating these challenges professionally, emotionally, it can bring on anxiety, uncertainty. And I can speak to how much therapy helped me and my family during a really difficult period for us. Sitting down, talking with a professional was huge. And BetterHelp has connected over 3 million people with licensed therapists. It's convenient, accessible anywhere, 100% online, no waiting rooms, no traffic. Plus, it's affordable. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to match with a therapist. And if things aren't clicking, you can easily switch to a new therapist anytime. So if you want to live a more empowered, balanced life, therapy can help you get there. So visit betterhelp.com/lockedon today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp, HELP.com/lockedon.
You know, it's interesting to me, Andy, that, you know, you mentioned, you know, the strategic move of playing Anthony Davis 44 minutes in this game. And it looked like, you know, and I'm not sure it was because of Anthony Davis fatigue, but, you know, Golden State, it is an incredibly nerve-wracking experience to be pulling for the Los Angeles Lakers down the stretch of a game against the Warriors. It is like, I know, so intellectually, I know Steph Curry, the rules are very specific about this thing. Steph Curry cannot hit a 9-pointer, but it feels like he's going to, like, every third trip, every time he shoots, you expect it to go in. Even Clay, who had a pretty rough game, aside from a couple, you know, hot stretches on Tuesday, Clay overall, 6 of 16 from three. When he shoots, you expect it to go in. Like, it just looks so nice. It is not good for your heart to watch the, you know, be rooting against, I mean, the Warriors in that way.
You hear all the time when people talk about the NBA how, with, you know, the advent of the 3-point line and the way this game has become so 3-point centric, no lead ever feels safe, which is part of what can keep a game exciting for 48 minutes. But when you're playing specifically against the Warriors, it's downright terrifying. And yeah. Steph is, you know, we talked about this during our preview with Cyrus and Kylan. Like, nobody bends a defense more than Steph, but also, frankly, nobody breaks a defense more. Like, nobody makes playing defense feel like the most futile waste of your time. Like, you are just pushing that boulder up the hill and it falls right back down.
Yep.
Like, it can be demoralizing going.
And that's interesting. And it's interesting you talk about that, because they spent a lot of time. Darvin talked about it before the game. He talked about it after the game. If you saw LeBron's post-game on-court interview with Mike Trudell for Spectrum, you know, he talked about it. I think he might have mentioned it at the podium as well. That's part of it. That is part of the challenge of playing the Warriors, is mentally it is so difficult. Like, you have to accept that there are going to be multiple possessions. And this happened when Golden State was making the run. It wasn't so much the Lakers were doing anything necessarily wrong on their side. It's more they just stopped hitting shots. But, you know, the Warriors will do things that are demoralizing, where you play two or three possessions in a row that are damn near perfect defensively, and Steph just hits the shot anyway, or Klay hits the shot anyway. And you have to not allow that to change what you're doing, or slump your shoulders, or get you down. You have to play through it. And it's easy to say when you're watching. It's really hard to do when you're in it.
Well, okay, to this point, and this ultimately leads to, I think, a reflection of D'Angelo Russell staying in this game. And D'Lo had a very nice game, I thought, in particular, third quarter, 10 points, 2 assists. He really got the Lakers going during a period when they needed a boost. He and AD in the third quarter were setting up baskets in tandem that were just masterful.
And he also had, and it's worth pointing out, like, when you mentioned before that run that Golden State made where they went down 12 and tied it up, the Laker who got the bucket that got them scoring again was Russell. I mean,
well, this is actually where I'm
perfect this series, but you might be going the same place I am.
Well, this is what the reason I brought up D'Lo was the fourth quarter opened with AD still on the floor, LeBron, Jared Vanderbilt, Austin Reeves, Dennis Schroeder. And, you know, it was clearly a defense first group. Like, it's probably the best pure defense group that Darvin can put out there, you know, and matches up very well with this particular team. But the offense was starting to grow stagnant, I think Darvin might have been a little conscious about Jared Vanderbilt not picking up like a fifth foul if he needed it later, but also, not getting
Steve Kerr also exhausted. Steve Kerr took Looney off the floor too, which changed the kind of tilt of the defense around a little bit. Right.
So Ham put in D'Angelo Russell for Vando, I think trying to get the offense going a little bit, and the zero on the back of Russell's jersey at that point might as well have been like a target emoji, because to say that Steph Curry was hunting D'Lo would be a massive understatement. And he was getting the looks that he wanted against D'Lo. D'Lo was working his ass off. He wasn't inattentive. He wasn't.
Yeah, and it's not like he was, it wasn't the intention. He wasn't the primary defender, but the Warriors know how to get you. Yeah, the defender they want in the situation. Yeah,
they were manipulating this to get D'Lo isolated against Curry. And, you know, we were talking before about, like, defending the Warriors, in particular defending Curry. Like, it's one thing to be on an island against, like, a driving LeBron or a driving Jimmy Butler, which is absolutely, you know, challenge, terrifying, whatever. But at least in that situation, you know, you might be heading towards a place where the help is coming. You know, you can shade maybe this guy somewhere where you can get a second guy to come over. When you're on that island against Steph, you are just naked, man. Like, you are just out there by yourself. And this all leads back to that bucket that you mentioned with D'Lo. He had 3 or 4 minutes of Steph either cooking him or looking to cook him. And yet he ended up coming up with that massive bucket down the stretch. It spoke really well to D'Lo just staying in the game and not letting the experience become deflating.
I mean, look, it's been a bit of a trend throughout the playoffs that, you know, playing really well. I mean, he's had a couple clunkers. I'm not, you know, but like generally, you know, playing really well, playing mediocre. So he's hit some really timely buckets for this team over the course of the now 7 games they've played in the playoffs. Well, like, oh man, they really need a bucket. Oh, okay. Like the Lakers desperately needed a basket in that situation. You know, you go back and you look at the, you know, the little ESPN, you know, on their Gamecast, the thing that tracks the score of the game. And like the Lakers have a flat line for like 4 minutes where they couldn't score. And that's why Golden State was able to tie this thing back up. And D'Lo getting that bucket just was enough of a push. The Lakers get a turnover on the other end. And like it got them out of that state that Golden State was pushing, and it kind of reset them quickly. And it was a huge part of what they were able to do. And you know, I was actually going to start this at the beginning of the segment. We didn't get to it. Like, why I think Darvin pushed AD for the 44 minutes. And what he was seeing in terms of the totality of this series. So let's get to that next. Okay, so I mentioned at the top of the show, Andy, like this game was as well rested as the Lakers were going to be. It was ever going to be the biggest advantage they had over the Warriors, who played on Sunday in Game 7. You know, any kind of institutional advantage the Lakers had in this series was going to come through in Game 1. After this, it's every other game, and they're basically back in the same boat. And I think Darvin Ham understood that. I think the Lakers understood that and said, this is the game. Well, because sometimes you'll see teams kind of wait until Game 2, really try to push or whatever. They're like, this is the game that if we're going to steal it, it's going to be this one. Yeah. And I think it was, you know, they don't want to play Anthony Davis 44 minutes every game in this series. But they were damn well willing to do it on Tuesday because they knew they had a bit of an advantage and had to press it to try to get ahead 1-0. And it worked.
Yeah, it did work. Like I said before, when I was worried it was going to backfire, or that it was backfiring due to fatigue, it made it clear then, but I'll say it again. I was not being critical of Darvin
doing it.
I totally understood why he did it. I likely would have done it if I was in his place. He talked, though, after the game about, like, this is why you do load management during the season. It's so you can ride your big dogs in the playoffs. And it was interesting just in the sense that I haven't necessarily thought of AD as a guy being particularly load managed this year. I've thought of him as somebody who's been hurt, and they've needed to make sure that he was right when he came back. And, you know, there was the back-to-back thing and, you know, the controversy over him not playing the second end of the Houston game and stuff like that. Right. But, like, you know, maybe I just have a different definition of load management. But to me, when somebody is dealing with injury, I don't consider that load management. I consider that managing a season. To me, load management is there's nothing specific. We're just looking to preserve you over the course of 82 games. And I don't say that as a positive or a negative as a comparison. I just think it's different. I think managing somebody's injury, like an active injury, and AD's foot injury was active. Again, this might be semantics. I don't think of that as load management.
It probably is a little bit, but like, you know, however you want to define it, you know, obviously, you know, part of this just it's hard to define because the Lakers are so cryptic about all of these things. Whereas, like the Warriors, for example, almost do the opposite. They overwhelm people with excruciating medical details that nobody totally understands. And you have so much information you don't know what to do with it. The Lakers just give you so little. But like they're clearly focused on how do we stretch him out, how do we maintain him, and all that. And there's a, you know, I think a feeling that, you know, you have to be careful. But the feeling of, you know, the impediments they feel they have on them, the brakes that they feel they have to put on them, or whatever it might be, they've taken them off now. And I was, you know, Derek Fisher was talking about it in the post game show, and I know we've talked about it, other people have talked about it. The part that is so fun, I think, about watching this with AD is like, okay, what's next? Like each step up the thing, it's like, okay, the really elite guys do this, you know, in a 7-game series, they do it 5 times, you know, or something like that. Can you do it 5 times? Can you come back in game 2 and do it again? Can you, you know, may not be 30-20. That's like, okay. But like, can you do what you did against Memphis where you're controlling that side of the ball and defensively, and still, if, you know, every game Anthony Davis stacks is just like one more that puts him back in that group of players that he had fallen out of. I mean, quite frankly, absolutely 100% fallen out of.
Yeah. And the truth is they're going to need this with AD because they're not going to get it from LeBron. Like, and I'm not saying that LeBron isn't going to have great moments for however long this playoff run goes.
No, he played, I mean, it wasn't super efficient. He got up to 9. I think he was 9 of 20 and missed his last 4 shots. But overall, he was pretty good, I thought. Played a pretty good game.
I thought he was shaky with a lot of offense. Although, frankly, a lot of this is just seriously stop taking so many threes. Like, just stop. Like, even if you think that this is a function of, you know, where he is in his career chronologically,
he doesn't have to take him. No.
You know, I thought defensively, actually, LeBron had a good game. I thought he was very on point. He had a lot of really strong moments there. But when I say that LeBron's not going to be able to do this game in, game out, I mean on both ends of the floor, like really dominating, controlling games like that. Yeah. Like, frankly, LeBron's career, that's not going to happen. And that's not an insult to LeBron. It's not a slight. It's an acknowledgement of where he is. That he's doing what he's doing now is mind-blowing. But that means that it's going to fall more on AD, because if it ain't AD, nobody else can do it. And if nobody else can do it, it means most likely they can only last so long in the playoffs.
Yeah.
It has to be AD.
And it needs to be AD. It needs to be the supporting cast needs to be there. Like, they got... You know, again, the shooting numbers, you know, I'm starting to wonder, because I made the joke, like, how many games in a row can you win, you know, during the Memphis series shooting under 30% from three? I was like, apparently the answer is 2 in a row, and then you lose the last one. They were 24% in game 1. Golden State made almost as many three-pointers as the Lakers attempted. Golden State had 21 makes. The Lakers only took 25. They only made 6. To win a game in the modern NBA where you are minus 15 in made three-pointers, you got to be doing a lot of other things really well. And what the Lakers did, you know, Golden State was 40% from three. They were 40% from the floor. So anything that wasn't a three, the Lakers defended extremely well. They didn't turn the ball over, particularly after a shaky start. You know, 6 early turnovers. They finished with 8.
They only had 2 in the second half.
Yeah, they parlayed one of their strengths, which is getting to the free throw line and keeping the other team away from it in a big way.
They actually made six free throws for the
Warriors on the night. And by the way, they didn't really deserve to get the line more than that. Yeah, I know Warriors fans are going to be complaining. They took 53 three-pointers. You know, you want to get to the line, don't take 53 three-pointers. But the Lakers got there 29 times and made 25. And so, you know, it wasn't a high-efficiency night from anyone other than Anthony Davis. But Reeves gave him a couple big buckets, you know, had a couple big threes when they needed it. We talked about Russell hitting some big shots. You know, Jared Vanderbilt had that corner three. LeBron, when he wasn't taking threes, was doing a lot of stuff. Also had 11 rebounds.
19 points on 10 shots, 9 of 10 at the line. Schroeder was pretty
great.
Efficient.
Schroeder had 8. Great.
We'll talk about him more. We'll talk about him more for Thursday. But Schroeder was terrific.
Yeah, he was. And but like they got that supporting cast, they got the team game plan, they got all that stuff. Because if LeBron's not going to be, you know, elite, the gap needs to be filled in somewhere else. Anthony Davis can pick up with some of that. And look, if this game goes seven, or if this series goes seven, LeBron's going to have, I would suspect, a couple games that are like, damn. But
of course he will.
But you don't it's hard to expect quote unquote playoff LeBron of 2014.
No, again, that has to be playoff Anthony Davis.
Right. Playoff Anthony Davis. And then the rest of the crew. And so we'll talk about it for Thursday. There's still
really real quick.
Oh, go ahead. Yeah, sure.
Real quick before, just to bring this full circle, because you had raised the question of how many times can, you know, you win games in the playoffs shooting a low percentage from behind the arc. I was talking about this with Peter Bukowski on the Locked On Sports Today show. I did a segment with him before doing our show, and this came up. And my response was basically, I think the Lakers are going to be doing it a lot over the course of however long they're in the playoffs, because at this point, this is who they are.
Uh-huh.
There'll be a few games where they uncork like 40% from behind the arc, like somebody, a couple guys will go on a heater and, you know, LeBron will keep the threes relatively low, something like that. But truth be told, that's not who they are. And they're going to have to win on what their strengths actually are. And that's ultimately what they did in tonight's game.
And if you're looking for something to be encouraged by for game two, it is, I think, one of the places you look is that 3-point number where, you know, the Warriors were 40% on a night where they took 53 3-pointers. And the Lakers only made 6 and they won the game. So we'll talk more about that. We'll talk about adjustments. We'll talk about Rui Hachimura and Jared Vanderbilt and some of the interesting rotation choices that Darvin Ham made from the Memphis series to this one. So plenty more to unpack as the Lakers prepare for game two on Thursday. And so every other day, man, these games are becoming real quick. Locked On Lakers on YouTube is where you can go to see the show. Reminder to the everydayers, the everyday listeners. We're going to be having everything that you need from this series. We'll try to bring in more guests, all this kind of stuff. You know, again, every other day, this series is going to be relentless. And if game one is any indication, really, really fun. So we will see everybody on Thursday.